Eyewitness to History. The event, Back to School in New Orleans. Charles Kuralt reporting from the Louisiana State Legislature in Baton Rouge.
In this room focuses the struggle of a sovereign state against the United States. This is the chamber of the House of Representatives of Louisiana, which has sought to frustrate integration in New Orleans by passing 22 laws and resolutions. This week, a federal court declared every one of those 22 laws and resolutions unconstitutional and enjoined every man now filing into this room from doing anything at all to interfere with school integration. That was the power of the federal government at work. Now these men are meeting again to vent their anger and to invoke the power of the state. At the center of this struggle are those who have no power at all, a few school children who are not here as the legislature meets.
14 pages of claptrap. It's my understanding that this one fellow with the two added to him now, the next thing they're going to tell us that they're going to dissolve this legislature. We've got to go home. As far as they have attempted to reach in this directive, I wouldn't be surprised at what they try to do in the future. I think it points up this bad position that we are in this country, and especially in view of the fact that it was the main thing that our founding fathers tried to guard against. And that is the judiciary trying to take over and run the government. I am convinced that the purpose of trying to get these children in school together is to create incidents between the two, so that the schools will choose up sides with the white on one side and the colored on the other side, and provoke gang warfare in our schools in the South just as they have up in Harlem right now.
I don't understand it, gentlemen. We are definitely on the road to socialism. And God help us if we have to continue along this road. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
As far as I'm concerned, this 14 pages, as though they had never been rendered and printed. I've said before, I intend to sit at my desk and vote every time that we have a bill coming up for the betterment of the people of the state of Louisiana and protecting our inherent rights. I intend to do it. And if they see fit to send me to jail, I hope they'll have an extension on the button and I can keep on voting the same way there. But what I'd like to say, quoting from some past characters, to hell with the court order, full steam ahead. Let's keep going. Thank you, gentlemen.
The governor of Louisiana, Jimmy Davis. We ask him today, is there anything the state can do now?
And we always have a lot of avenues, and we're going to continue to use every means we know how. That's for the good of everybody, and I must say again, it's without prejudice, because nobody in the whole country, no man in any state, is a better friend of the colored people than I am, because we've gone out to make every provision in the world. And that when I say that, it not only applies to me, it applies to members of the legislature, because what is done here we think is good for the state, it's good for the people, it's good for the white, it's good for the colored, and it's good for the entire nation, and it's good for the whole world.
What the state government is now trying desperately to do is, first, to keep pressuring the school board. Second, to convert the public school system to a system of private schools, which the courts couldn't touch. The state defies the court on the basis of a state's rights doctrine called interposition, the idea that a state can interpose its power between federal law and the people. The court has already dismissed interposition as nothing but an escape valve by which state governments blow off steam while federal law goes into effect in spite of them, as is now happening in New Orleans. Integration slowly gathering momentum. This afternoon, when classes let out at William France School, newsmen counted 10 white children who had defied the white boycott more than any other day this week. They were driven to school and driven home by members of Save Our Schools, another force in this struggle, an organization dedicated to keeping the schools open. Most Save Our Schools members are not integrationists. But they insist that token integration is not the disaster that padlocks on school doors would be. We asked three of the 2,500 members why they're in this fight.
I believe in public education. I think this is America's great contribution to the world.
Well, of course, my reason, I think my prime motivation is the fact that I'm in business. And I think we've had some very shocking experiences in our neighboring states in this matter of the effect that closed schools would have on business. And certainly when this thing was contemplated, even before school was to open in September, we felt some effect economically in the city.
Have you felt any effect since integration came to New Orleans?
Very definitely. Very definitely.
What kind of effect?
I think that the retail stores find that they're off between 20% and 30% in their sales.
Oh, really?
The tourists are not apparently not coming to New Orleans, tourists who ordinarily would come.
Does this kind of thing worry businessmen, Mr. Baptist?
It worries them to death.
What about you, Mrs. Wright? Why are you in this organization?
Well, as a lawyer, I've always been interested in constitutional law. And I thought that perhaps I could make some contribution in helping to clarify the legal situation. The politicians, I think, have misled the people in Louisiana by telling them that there are legal devices that can be used, which will work.
You don't think there are?
Oh, no. There is no legal device other than close all the schools in the state and completely withdraw from public education.
Well, now, in Baton Rouge, you hear interposition mentioned, that is, the state interposing itself between the people and the federal government. That's not a valid device?
No. This is not a legal remedy. Interposition is a persistent theory, but it is only a theory. It has never received any legal sanction from the Supreme Court of the United States. And as a matter of fact, the idea of interposition is impossible. If each one of the 50 states could decide which federal law they would obey, well, the union would dissolve overnight.
Interposition is a word that Ruth Nell Bridges hasn't learned to spell yet. While the legal debates proceed and injunctions are handed down, while federal government fights state government and Save Our Schools fights the White Citizens Council, Ruth Nell Bridges has to go to school. She goes every day with two United States Marshals. Rolling through the neighborhood in which she has grown to be 6 years old, and up to a school where she is the only Negro student. Bridges leaves William Krantz School each day, she faces the same shouts from the same people. The crowd is never very large, no more than 70 or 80 people, but it is always very loud. This is what the only Negro student in the only truly integrated public school in the Deep South sees and hears every afternoon. And the white children who used to fill the corridors of William Krantz School in McDonough 19, well, they still gather at school every morning, but only a few go in. The others meet in a cluster on the school grounds, and then they board buses to segregated schools in the next parish. Supervising this operation is a man named Armand Duvio. The Plumbers Association, to which he belongs, is paying for the buses. He gets his drivers where he can.
All right, sir. As long as we get capable men with their certificates and everything, we'll be all right.
Well, we've all got them. We've got to have them. Well, we do it.
That's right. Okay, so thank you very much. We'll see.
Armand Duvio is president of the France School Cooperative Association, which hopes to set up private schools with state aid. In the meantime, the bus lift for the older children. There isn't room in neighboring St. Bernard Parish for the first, second, and third graders to go to school, so they aren't on these buses. They stay home every day. By Christmas, the segregationist parents hope their own private school will be in operation. In the meantime, the buses roll, leaving the desegregated public school buildings almost empty behind them. Some parents use their own cars to see that their children reach segregated schools. This is Patsy Drews, 10 years old. Her mother says she'll never go to school with Negroes. A neighbor comes for them every day, and they take the drive into St. Bernard Parish, where everything is peaceful and segregated, passing on the way McDonough 19, where Patsy used to go to school.
Okay, there's a school. Look, it looks like they can have it. It's not integrated no more. It's a colored school now. Let's stop my
favorite. Oh, we still have mothers.
Oh, yeah, we still have mothers here boycotting. We'll make sure we have to come back and make sure there's none in there. You anxious to get down there, baby?
I'm shifting for second that time.
Not too anxious.
It's a new school for you, but you'll like it, baby.
I like it a little bit now.
You like it a little bit? Sure, you'll get used to it, honey.
The school Patsy goes to now is in a county that has not yet been ordered to start integration and that has offered to take in white children from integrated schools in New Orleans. You know, it seems to me that driving your children all the way into the next parish is an awful lot of trouble. Why don't you want your children to go to school with a handful of Negro children?
Because my children are never raised to go to school with the Negroes.
Are you afraid something might happen to them if they did?
No, sir. I'm not the least bit afraid.
I mean, if they did go to school with Negroes.
No, I just don't want them to go to school with the Negroes. They won't go with them.
What about the few parents whose children are going to school at France School with Negroes still? Do you think pressure ought to be brought to get them to take their children out?
Well, I don't know too much about France. I know we didn't have to use too much pressure in 19 at all. The mothers just automatically took their children out. The minute they went in there, some of the mothers had their children in the school, and they went in immediately and took their children out.
Well, there's pressure at Fram School because we took a ride there yesterday, and a minister's daughter is still in school. And when he came out of his door, from his door to school was approximately a block and a half. When he came out of his door to go pick up the child, he was booed by the Fram's parents from the time he left from his door to the school door, and when he came out all the way back home, he was booed.
Well, do you think he should be booed? Do you think that's right?
Well, we did it at our school. I mean,
We didn't actually boo the children.
No, not the children.
The children are innocent. We booed for what they stood for what was being forced on us without our consent. We weren't asked, do you want integration? We had a card stating, would we prefer token integration or would we prefer to have our schools closed completely? I mean, and that isn't much of a choice.
Well, where's the money coming from to carry on this battle of yours?
From everywhere. We're getting all kinds of donations.
How do you go out collecting money?
Yes, sir. Last Friday night and last Sunday, we went down on Friscoville, and we had all the mothers from France School, 19 School, also fathers was out there with us, and we collected for the people as they were passing in the automobile. I imagine about $2,200. Between Friday and Sunday that we collected down there. They just took their hands in their pockets and they gave us everything that they had in their pockets. They threw in the bucket.
You don't look like violent people.
No, we don't want violence. I mean,
no, violence is the last thing. I don't believe in violence. I don't believe in running up to any Negro person and striking them because they are Negro, and I don't think that the Negro people should run up to us and strike us because they're fighting for what they think of, you know, is right, and we're fighting for what we think is right.
Well, now here you are, mothers, facing all the federal courts and the federal government, even the New Orleans School Board. Do you think you have a chance in the long run against all those forces of the government?
We're going to try. We're going to fight to the last dog, huh? We're not going to give up.
Right now, the main hope in this fight is to keep integration from making any practical headway, keep it from becoming a fact. Thus, the school boycott and the pressure against white parents who break it. The minister they keep booing is the Reverend Lloyd Forman, who takes his 5-year-old daughter to kindergarten.
Simply want the privilege of taking my child to school. If others want to keep theirs out, then that's their privilege. She said I wanted the privilege of taking mine to school. This is the way I feel about it.
Let's go.
It'll be a fire for your child, but not for you, brother.
What color is he?
Another white parent who refused to join the boycott is Mrs. James Gabriel. She has kept taking her daughter Yolanda through a gauntlet of jeering and sometimes swinging segregationists. The Gabriel family lives in an apartment in this public housing project. Mrs. Gabriel, born in Central America, has lived in New Orleans since she was 7. Her husband, a New Englander, has lived here for 6 years. He works for the city. Some sympathizers have called them courageous.
Well, I wouldn't say courageous. I just say that I believe my child should have an education. And until the government, the United States government, that is, and the governor of Louisiana can make up their mind what to do, my child will go to that school. Because I just don't believe in mob rule telling me what to do with my child. My child have an education regardless of what the outcome is going to be.
Would you consider yourself a segregationist? Do you believe in segregation?
No, I don't believe in segregation. I believe that a man should have his rights.
What about you, Mrs. Gabriel?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't hate any race. I don't hate any creed. I say this with all my heart. I don't hate anything because I think that I really believe this sincerely that God created all of us equal, regardless whether you're black and you're yellow, or what color, regardless what color or religion. Therefore, I have no sense of separation because hatred comes from that. When you hate, you feel separated. And therefore is the reason why I can't feel the way these people feel. I understand their feelings, and believe me, they have my deepest compassion because I know how it is. I imagine that I know how it is. But on the other hand, I have my own ideas also, and therefore I have to use my own judgment as an American citizen. That is my right, my constitutional right, to use my judgment.
Are you willing to keep undergoing the jeers and maybe even the threat of violence to yourself for this principle?
Yes, I will. I will. I think I would continue because let's say that in man there is a conscience, and you know, I'd rather stand the jeers and the beatings, if necessary, than my own conscience. My own conscience is something I have to live with.
Is there any other school to which Yolanda could go?
Well, I imagine that there are other schools, maybe, not around here. Other schools, they talk about a private school, but the point is this, that if I want her to go to friend's school, she has every right to go. If I think it is best for her, and if I think that the principle of the thing is that she must go to friends, that's where she will go. In other words, what I mean is this, I am not going to take her to private school or any other school because a mob says that I must do it.
You seem to have a strong feeling about this.
Yes, I do. I feel exactly just like my wife feels.
Isn't there some danger in this for Yolanda?
I don't believe so. I don't believe adults, grown adults, like we've seen today, would stoop as low as to harm a child. Maybe they would try to harm me or my wife, but that's not important. My child's education comes first.
Are you worried about losing your job or you losing your friends or anything of the sort?
Well, as far as my friends, I'm not worried about my friends. If my friends want to leave me, well, that's just not friends. As far as my job, I am worried about my job. But if it means taking a choice between my job and my child going to school, to France school, I'll choose my child going to France school.
Just now, you don't have many people on your side. Only 3 or 4 other white families have children in school. Do you think that many of your neighbors will soon come around to your way of thinking and send their children back to school?
No, I have had a few of my neighbors consider me a fool, and I believe some consider me a crackpot, naturally. When you stand for a principle, and it happens that the percentage is so low for that principle, everybody else thinks you are a crackpot.
Yolanda, we haven't talked to you. Are you having fun at school?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
What's your teacher's name?
Miss Mooney.
And how many children are in your classroom with you?
Today?
Yes.
Me?
All by yourself?
Who else, dear, who's in school? In the first grade?
Nobody else.
Yolanda Gabriel is the only child in her class, but she does have company in her school. Today there were 9 other white children and 1 Negro. So, however slowly, integration is proceeding, just as it finally did in Little Rock and Clinton when the federal courts put their foot down. In both of these once troubled communities, integration is now a fact, though it's still just token integration. The only place where integration is being blocked altogether is Prince Edward County, Virginia. There, the public schools have been converted to segregated private schools, operated by a nonprofit foundation set up for that purpose. The children pay with grants which they get from the state. This is the scheme that Louisiana segregationists hope to set up. But observers point out that Prince Edward has only a few thousand students, while New Orleans, if it were to take care of both races, would have to take care of 90,000, a much more complex job all around, one that even the state legislators you saw at the beginning of this program don't seem really optimistic about. Something should be said about this town, and you can say them best from Bourbon Street, where life has always been easygoing. New Orleans is an easygoing city. It's not a place in the grip of racial tension. The sound of the trumpets on Bourbon Street still ring truer than the new unfamiliar sound, the raucous shouting on street corners in front of schools. This is just too worldly and sensible and friendly a place to give in long to an emotion like hate. Take a walk down Burgundy Street as I did this afternoon, and what you see is the old grillwork balconies over the narrow streets, all lying there in the sun. Whites and Negroes live side by side in the French Quarter. Their fathers live side by side before them. The residential segregation that marks most cities, north and south, just isn't here. The races shop together on Canal Street, of course. Then they ride home on the same bus together. This is a southern city, but it speaks in an accent tinged with French and Spanish, and there's a mixture of races that long predates the 1954 decision of the Supreme Court. That court decision and the march of events that have followed it have brought New Orleans to its dilemma of this week. It is a real dilemma, but not a hopeless one. New Orleans is still a city of goodwill. And when you leave the small, rowdy mobs at the school, you can still feel it. Undoubtedly, 4 6-year-old Negro girls cannot feel it. But they are caught amid forces that do not come naturally to New Orleans. School segregation comes naturally, but hate does not. And that is the central fact, and that is the great hope. This is Charles Kuralt. Good evening.